Yes, and welcome to episode 56 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
I'm Matt.
And I am Darren.
And this week we are looking at 1984's
Ghostbusters. Yeah, don't get scared now.
I think since the inception of this podcast, we've been wanting to do this.
Well, we've been waiting for something to happen, haven't we? Really?
We have. We've put this episode off and off and off because
the film has been put off and off and off. If you're not aware, actually, one of our listeners who's very good at getting in touch, he gives us lots of feedback, was completely unaware that there was a new film on the horizon.
And it looks so good.
Yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment until I've seen it.
I've heard initial rumblings, Darren, and they appear to be good. And they say it keeps the spirit of the original,
right?
Whilst you're making it relevant now. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll find out. This is going to be one of the ones that I do go to the cinema to watch.
Fantastic. Well, should we go to the IMAX?
Okay, then.
All right, then.
Plymouth's got an IMAX. Can you fucking believe that?
I know.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there, really. We're talking about the original from 1984. Mm. So without any further ado, should we go back to 1984?
Let's go back to 1984. Right, Darren, so some facts about 1984. I apologise if starting on this in a downer, but we lost one of arguably the most famous granddads in Britain in 1984. Leonard Pearce.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Granddad.
From Only Fools and Horses.
Oh, that was it. That was a sad day.
That was a sad day. And it's particularly prevalent at the moment because we've recently as well lost John Challis.
So. Yeah, another fine actor.
Yep.
Great star of Only Fools. And a nice guy.
Yeah, you knew him, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked with him twice. A lovely, lovely man. Yeah, for such a big star, and he was, you know, we've got to remember that Only Fools and Horses was watched, I think, the last episode, what should have been the last episode.
Yeah.
It was like the most watched TV programme or TV comedy in history.
That is just phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And such a lovely, so quiet, unassuming. I worked on Panther with him a couple of times. Always brought his wife with him, his dresser. Aww. A lovely, lovely couple. Yeah, it's very sad. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago we lost him.
And Leonard Pearce, he was only 69 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's nothing. Well, listen, let's raise a glass to those two.
Absolutely. Cheersy.
And, also in 1984, are you familiar with the Night and Day concert?
No.
It seemed to be quite a thing. So the Night and Day concert was a concert performed by Elton John in 1984 at Wembley. Quite a big deal, apparently.
Any particular reason why it was called Night and Day, or is that just the name of the tour?
Apparently it was a concert for Wembley or something like that. So I should have gone more into it, but it seemed particularly relevant though because I think you're going to watch Elton John next year, aren't you?
Yes, so long as he doesn't fucking fall down the stairs again and break his other hip. Yeah.
Also in 1984, the United States Army retired Donald Duck from active duty on his 50th birthday, so with the rank of Buck Sergeant. So there we are.
Okay. I have to take your word for that. What the fuck is all that about?
I know, I'm getting thin on the ground with some of these. In 1984, John DeLorean is acquitted
of
all 8 charges of possessing and distributing cocaine.
Okay.
So,
he had to raise money somewhere, I suppose, for that car.
It's a nice car, though, isn't it?
Yeah, not the most reliable of vehicles, but what a looker.
And finally, now this is a bit of not a tenuous link, but in 1984, the film Dune was released.
Yeah.
And do you know, next month we are getting
a new version.
A new version of Dune, which is bizarre because also in 1984 we had Ghostbusters, and then in a couple of months we are getting a new. So they're in tandem. Ooh, hey, so there we are. I thought that was just a nice little.
Still no new ideas.
Yeah, basically. Apparently, the new Juno is amazing.
Right.
So
I found the original, if you like, quite dull, I have to be honest.
Ghostbusters or Juno?
We'll have to wait and see.
But yeah, so those are my facts of 1984.
Nice.
So do we have a chart?
Nope.
Oh, right. Okay. They decided to stop doing charts.
No, I did a year. I forgot to look. Ghostbusters received its premiere in California on the 7th of June 1984 and its proper release in Canada and the USA on the 8th of June 1984. And so this week we are looking at the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 3rd of June 1984. At number 10 this week, rising 9 places from last week's 19, it's The Smiths and Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now. At number 9, up 2 places, it's Evelyn Thomas and High Energy. And at number 8, it's a rise of 7 places from last week's 15 for Howard Jones and Pearl in the Shell. Falling 2 places from last week's 5 to number 7, it's The Style Council and Grooving, You're the Best Thing. And rising 2 places from last week's number 8 to this week's number 6, it's Hazel Dean and Searching, I Gotta Find a Man. Into the top 5, and it's a new entry at number 5 for Spandau Ballet and Only When You Leave. At number 4, it's a fall of 1 place for Duran Duran and The Reflex. And up from last week's number 6 into the top 3 at 3, it's Ultravox and Dancing with Tears in My Eyes. It's a static top 2 this week. At 2, it's Denise Williams and Let's Hear It for the Boy. And last week's number 1 is this week's number 1 for Wham and Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. And that was the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 3rd of June 1984. What a top 5! Oh my God, actually, what a top 10. Wow. Just a minute. I mean, I've grown to like the Smiths a lot over the last few years. I always thought Morrissey was a bit of a knob.
just,
if I'm honest.
Just say what you say.
I've just been honest. But actually, the more I listen to this stuff, I don't think there's a Morrissey or Smith song that I don't like.
Oh.
I think they're all really good. And even things like Girlfriend in a Coma, I think they're all sort of done with a little bit of tongue in the cheek.
Okay. And where were they?
They were at number 10 for Heaven Knows I'm Miserable.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just some of the Smiths stuff is just phenomenal. So I've got a real newfound respect for Morrissey and the Smiths. But what a top 5 as well. Actually top 6. I really like Hazel Dean. Saw Hazel Dean at Rewind a few years ago. She's like your crazy auntie, full of high energy, dance stuff. But just great. I mean, Only When You Leave, Spandau Ballet. The Reflex, Duran Duran. That's one of the songs of the decade for me. Ultravox. I'm sure we've cocked on a lot about Midure.
I mean, we might have mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously Wham at number 1. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, Duran Duran, you've always wanted to see, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, they are number 2 on my list of bands I still can't believe I haven't seen.
What's number 1?
Def Leppard.
Of course it is. Of course.
So just outside the top 10, at number 12, Sad Song Say So Much, Elton John. at 13, Bronski Beat with Small Town Boy. And we saw Jimmy, didn't we? At Rewind. Automatic at 14 for the Pointer Sisters. I Want to Break Free from Queen. Relax, Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Footloose, Kenny Loggins. Against All Odds, Phil Collins.
This is quite the year.
Isn't it? Farewell, My Summer Love, Michael Jackson. Locomotion for OMD at 28. Dancing in the Dark, Bruce Springsteen at 34.
Oh, I like that.
What a week to be alive that was. What a chart.
What a chart. Yep. And and
it's then 1984 again. Isn't it?
You can listen to it and then go and watch Ghostbusters at the film.
But
watch Ghostbusters at the film.
But where is the song Ghostbusters?
I'm guessing not charting yet.
Yeah, not released in this country yet. Crazy days. But there we go.
I think it used to take a little while back then. I think we probably it'll be in a chart for 1987 or something.
Exactly. But maybe from the video release. Yeah. But there we go. That's the UK top 40 or the UK top 10 that week.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right then, let's move on to Darren's challenge. So Darren has a challenge every week to get from last week's film to this week's film in a certain amount of moves, starting with 5, moving down to 1. Last week's film, Darren, was
Child's Play.
And you've got I believe it's one move to get from
one move
to get from Child's Play
to Ghostbusters.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. As Matt said, I had one move this week. And I think I've only been successful with this so far for one time, haven't I?
At Bandcamp.
I looked and looked and looked. I was literally flicking between pages for the whole thing of Ghostbusters and the whole thing of Child's Play. I thought, you know, there's got to be a makeup artist or a visual effects
artist. Yeah.
And I was about to give up.
Oh, you reeled me in then. You reeled me in good, Darren.
Oh, what a swine. So anyway, one step challenge, Step number one. James Thatcher, the musician, played French horn in the orchestra for Child's Play. The player of the French horn in the orchestra for Ghostbusters was the same James Thatcher. And that was the one-step challenge.
Thank you, James Thatcher.
Thank God for you, James Thatcher. Oh, yeah, I almost tore my remaining hair out trying to find someone.
Oh, you need to email him and say thank you.
Thanks, James. Yeah, the only link I could find was the fucking French horn player.
Well, bless you, James
that's
Thatcher.
That's his official name.
That's his official title, right? Okay. Oh, that's amazing. Well done, buddy.
I'm going to give myself a well-earned drink for that.
Yeah, I'm going to drink and as a cheersy to you.
Cheersy. So at this point in the podcast, sorry, the B-cast, Matt has to give us the synopses of the film. I don't know why I put that accent on. I do apologise. And he has as many seconds as the film has minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite a long one from what I remember. How long was the film?
1 hour and 45.
Ooh, so you have 1 minute 45 seconds to give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
I am.
Then go!
Go surreal, and in a New York public library, one appears to a librarian before the titles blast onto the screen. We then meet Peter Venkman, Ray Stantz, and Egon Spengler, who work for a university for now. They check out the ghost who scares them, but divine proof they are real. The boys lose their jobs and go into business for themselves. Ray takes out a few mortgages on the house his parents left him, and they go about becoming the Ghostbusters. They take on an old fire station, an old hearse, and a young Janine. Their first client is the beautiful Dana Barrett, who has seen ghosts in her apartment. Venkman investigates as he's trying to get with her, as is her hapless neighbour, Lewis. After a quiet start, the boys capture Slimer at a local hotel, then business really gets going and we see how successful they're becoming through a montage that ends with Ray having sexy time with a ghost. Winston Zeddemore joins the team, just in time for Walter Peck from the EPA to turn up and be a dick. Dana and Venkman arrange a date, but unfortunately she gets possessed, as does Lewis. All the while, Peck turns up at HQ and shuts off the containment unit that houses the ghost, unleashing all hell. The Ghostbusters get arrested until the mayor needs them to clean up the town. They go to Dana and Lewis's building and take on Gozer. They're invited to choose the form of their destruction, and Ray accidentally thinks of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. The boys do something that all boys do, eventually, and they cross the streams. This allows for a total platonic reversal, which sends the baddies away, and the Ghostbusters save the day and greet their loving public.
Okay. So just remind us, how long was the film?
1:45.
1:45. So yeah, 1 minute 45 seconds. You did it in, drum roll, 1 minute 30 seconds. You've made up for last week there.
I ain't afraid of no ghost.
There we go, 1 minute 30 seconds.
It's true, though, all boys do cross the streams.
I thought you were just going to get some sort of reference of being covered in white sticky stuff.
Whoa!
But that would be vile. Yeah, so there we go. Nice, nice.
That
yeah.
is the story in a nutshell, I suppose.
It is. No, this is me it's in a nutshell. Anyhow, yeah, so Ghostbusters, 1984. Initial reaction?
Yeah, initial reaction. I mean, I've always had an affinity for this film. It hit me at the right time.
Yeah.
So going back to it, and I've probably not watched it in a long time, I was surprised how much I remembered, but I was also surprised at how short it is. I remember it being longer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having an hour 45 just flew by for me, and right. Yeah, maybe it didn't for you, but yeah, it's snappy, it's pacey. I think it's just a very, very, very well-made film.
Mm-hmm.
Some effects don't hold up so well now, but I think that's to be expected with a film that's, 37 years old.
Yeah, scary. 37, fucking.
Yeah. I was going to say 27 years old. I keep doing that. But, mostly it's still in the very special place for me. I haven't, I didn't go back and go, oh, no, I've just ruined my childhood.
Good.
So, what about yourself, buddy?
Yeah, I think I actually enjoyed it more this time than I have done previous times. It's never been one of the films that I go back to. I always enjoyed it at the time. I always thought it was a bit, just not for me, really. I could see the appeal. But watching it this weekend, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
I think it's too long.
By 15 minutes?
At least. I think I love some of the effects. I mean, the stuff in the library at the beginning of the film.
Wow.
It's really good. But I just think some of the characters are a bit pushed aside to make it a little bit the Bill Murray show.
Mm-hmm.
And some scenes just like, well, what's the point of that? Especially the one towards the end where the ground just sort of moves and opens up. They fall into the hole.
Get out.
And then they climb out of the hole. Yeah. And then carry on with the story. So, okay, fine. There's a point in the scene. So I think it could be a bit snappier. But on the whole, no. It's a lot of fun.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's a lot of smoking and a lot of swearing, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, so, you just summed up the 80s. It's a lot of smoking, yeah. A lot of swearing, but a lot of fun.
But no, I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, brilliant. Well, let's. Should we go deeper into it?
Ooh, yeah. So anyway, yes, we're going deeper in. Let's rip this baby to shreds and see what we can pull out for you, as it were.
I mean, first of all, I want to say there's some brilliant set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard you talk a lot in the past on the podcast about, you know, and stuff that I'd never really noticed, and I've started to notice now.
Right.
Matte paintings.
Yes.
I've noticed a lot of those in this film.
Yeah, some of them, they didn't work too well, some of them, did they?
No.
They really didn't.
I mean, at the end, I was like, yeah, they're not on the top of a building. They're on a soundstage.
Yeah. A lot of it does look like sets.
Mm.
Almost theatre sets. Maybe it's the way they're lit. It doesn't help that you can see some blacks around. Drapes. We call them blacks in the theatre because they're black cloths. So it doesn't help that you can see those around the set, quite obviously, in some mm-hmm. places. But on the whole, I think it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the library set at the beginning.
I'm guessing that is in the library.
Maybe.
Because it just seems too authentic to me.
See, apparently the bookshelf did fall down and they just kept it. They went,
oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't meant to be a thing.
Shit. But they didn't react like it yeah.
Some nice. Of those lines though as well, like, I guess it's the whole, yes, no normal human being would stack books in this way.
There's some great lines in there. And looking into the facts and things, a lot of it is improvised, isn't it?
Mm.
And you can almost tell. Bill Murray, you just think sometimes that was funny. And other times you think, shut up.
Yeah, all right, Bill. You rein it in a little bit.
You have
yeah.
to keep quipping at the end of somebody's line. So that sort of jarred a little bit for me. Not too much, because I love Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But Bill Murray is just Bill Murray in everything, isn't he? He's Bill Murray in this. He's Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. He's Bill Murray in Scrooged. No bad thing.
No, but it's he does help make this film. I think,
yeah,
you know, once we get into casting, there's a lot of people that maybe could have been Venkman.
Mm-hmm. I just feel with him sort of being given the limelight so much, the others get pushed aside slightly, especially Dan Aykroyd, who we know is an amazing comedian as well.
And completely obsessed with this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
He's a real, I don't know, a supernatural believer, I suppose.
Right.
He's completely like obsessed with this stuff. He really believes in all of this.
Okay.
I've seen him on, you know, radio and TV interviews.
You've seen him
stuff.
On radio?
but as in, I've seen him on radio interviews where they filmed it and things. Yeah, so, and he's very passionate about, he seriously believes in all this sort of stuff.
Okay. I mean, I don't think I do, but...
No, I mean, yeah, let's get that
We're
out of there.
We're non-believers.
Now. We are non-believers in until...
Although,
okay.
Having said that, bizarrely, I mean, it's got to be just coincidence because, you know, realistically, is this sort of thing possible? After my granddad on my mum's side, he passed away in 76, something like that. I think, yeah, 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, Gran came to live with us. And she passed away in 1983, day before my 9th birthday. And she always, in Mum and Dad's house, they had a small toilet downstairs and the main bathroom upstairs. And she would only ever use the toilet downstairs.
Mm.
And she was pretty much the only one because I didn't like it. It was carpeted, a dark carpet, and I just saw the spiders in there. So I wouldn't go in there. But we were all sat watching TV a couple of months after she passed away. And the downstairs toilet flushed. And all four of us were in the living room watching the TV at the time.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay. But do I think that was Gran? Of course I don't. But I don't know. I think I am pretty much 99.9%
skeptic. Did you sleep very badly that night?
No, because if it was my Gran, she's not going to hurt me, is she?
I know, but I mean, you kind of go like, what?
Well, so it's like, what just happened? Not what the fuck just happened there, because I was in 9. What just happened there?
Mm.
Okay. But who knows?
Who knows?
You ever had any psychic or
no? Yeah, I mean, I suppose it was once, again, to do with my grandmother. My grandmother, my father's side, had passed. And I do remember having a very vivid dream about her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on a, this sounds really dark, but she was like on a bus for the dead or something. And it pulled up and the road behind us and stopped third house in. And they got out. Interestingly, about, I think, 6 months to a year later, that's the house we moved into. So we'd moved around, oh, we moved really? Around the corner.
Oh, wow.
And into that house. And I was like, oh, hang on. I remember this from a dream.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So, but no, nothing. Nothing really. I mean, I've been to some spooky places and...
Yeah, but I think that's more to do spooking yourself, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I get spooked so easily by anything, to be honest.
But no, I think I used to be terrified as a kid. But no, as an adult, I'm... Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally I mean, too drunk.
Yeah, true. I think I'm scared more of actual things. Because there's some fucking freaks out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Some horrible bastards. Anyway, yeah, let us know. Have you had experience... Convince us otherwise. Have you experienced anything that you know that you would stake, you know, whatever on you know being real? Let us know.
Yeah, please.
I'd be
do.
Interesting to hear. I'd be interested to hear. Anyway, yes. There we go. That's another diversion. Let's get back to this film, shall we?
Yeah, the spirits are kicking in with us, and it's
and my spirit has got coke in it.
So I mean, there are some really great moments in this film, aren't
yeah.
there?
I think we bandy the word iconic around a lot.
But this is, isn't it?
But so much of it. I mean, even things that, like down to the car. It's such an iconic car. I mean, it's what, an ex-ambulance?
I think so, yeah.
But, you know, I guess for our generation, if you say, what sort of car is this? Okay. It's Ecto-1.
Ecto-1, yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of this film has passed into pop culture.
There was moments, and I was watching it, I was quoting stuff that I didn't even realise I still knew the words to.
Because
I was
fucked the quiz up, didn't I?
No, but do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, I just didn't realise I still knew some of the words because I hadn't watched it in so long.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I know what's about to be said here. And then, I don't know, I mean, it's everything from the fire station to... Mm-hmm. And visually, a lot of this really holds up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the stuff with the ghosts in the library.
Yep.
Works so well. I mean, that would be passable
now
for a film now. It's and it's so good. The opening, the pre-title sequence with the librarian being spooked, and you don't see what's happening. And then when they go in and you see the old lady floating, it's such a good effect. And you know the turning of the. I know you can see how the pages are turning. It's a bit visible, but the interaction between Aykroyd, you know, and she says shh. It's I love it. It's a really, really good
What's
effect.
What's your plan? Get her!
Yeah, good plan. Yeah, no, I really like that.
But the chemistry with the boys as well, it's so evident.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, they just, you know.
I just think that the Egon just doesn't get a chance to do too much. And, he should do more.
Yeah, Egon's one of my favourites, actually.
And the less said of it, poor old Winston.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we'll get into that.
Absolutely. There's some definite casting options there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm guessing the film was probably sponsored by USA Today, Budweiser and Coca-Cola.
Probably.
Yeah. And just smoking.
And smoking. Smoking indeed, which is it's still very prevalent in 1984.
Yes.
But this, as you say, iconic moments that are scattered throughout this tapestry of...
Oh, fucking hell.
An hour 45. And I think I did notice more this time, you know, how some of the Bill Murray stuff was a little bit like, okay, interesting choice. Whereas I just accepted it as a kid.
He's quite sleazy, isn't he? Especially at the start.
Yes.
So, I mean,
he's only about 37, 38 in this film.
He's not
in that, is he? He was born in 50, so he's about 34.
Jeez, must have been a tough paper round. But you got to love him. Anyway, we'll look at the cast later. The actual film itself... So the ghosts at the start, they're great. I like when they get chucked out of the university because I'm not actually sure what they're actually doing at university. They never seem to be really explained. And they're obviously not taking it that well. He definitely isn't taking it seriously.
No, and I watched some deleted scenes to do with that as well. Right. You know, him being thrown out. And
right.
Well, them all being thrown out. And it's a very fast sort of... It does bolt along from them being fired to Ray taking out mortgages and then getting the firehouse and the hearse and the, you know... They tidied it really bloody quickly as
yes,
well.
They did.
The place was in a hell of a state. It looked pretty good.
And then there's the stuff in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, pretty iconic.
That
Slimer,
is.
Slimer, maybe down more to the cartoon, because he was a main character in the cartoon.
He was, yeah. He lived with them in the cartoon. So I think, yeah, that probably had a good deal to do with it. And mm-hmm. I think the cartoon also then, it became very... I mean, Janine was Janine in the first film, but mm-hmm. then by the second film, she looked more like the cartoon character. And I think it all started to bleed into one, really.
Yeah, it becomes a franchise then by Ghostbusters 2, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. How cool is it, though, the first moment you see the garage doors open, Ecto-1 coming out, you're like, oh,
and that
come
screaming,
on.
Obviously vocal siren.
Yeah. Okay, other set pieces as well we got? I mean, as you say, the hotel is brilliant.
Yep.
Some great moments, you know, mm-hmm. with the whole, I'll get the next one, and, you know, and shooting the maid and the, you know, the whole ballroom stuff is brilliant. Yep. But again, faster than I remember. We get a montage.
Yes, we get a couple of montages.
Montage.
Yeah, always good to have a montage. And obviously, we go into the block of flats with Weaver and Moranis.
Mm-hmm.
Again, underused. But yeah, they're real highlights of the film for me as well.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
and it's also lovely at the end of, you know, we've got the Ray blowjob scene, and then so then that montage finishes, and we get Winston joins us.
Yes,
and that's cool. I love Ernie Hudson.
Yeah,
I think he's fucking
very
awesome.
Very underused in this first
he
film.
Is. And then we meet our kind of antagonist in this, don't we? Which is Dickhead. Oh,
yeah.
That poor man, right? He just gets all the worst characters.
But they're quite often the best characters, aren't they? Being the baddie or the asshole.
Apparently he said to Reitman, everyone wants to pick a fight with me. So, and someone was driving past me and called me Dickless.
Yeah, William Atherton as Walter Peck.
Yeah, Pecker. Will definitely talk about him during the casting. But yeah, I mean, he had a rough ride in the 80s with that and Die Hard.
To be fair, though, all Venkman had to do was just show him the thing.
Yeah, he did. So yeah. it was Bill Murray's fault.
Exactly.
Sorry,
exactly.
Bill.
Being all cocky.
When it does go nuts,
mm-hmm.
and we see all these different iterations of, like, ghosts, that's fun.
It would have been nice to see more, I think. I mean, I love the taxi driver.
Yeah.
That, again, being a physical puppet, I suppose. So that's good. But then you see Slimer and the sort of floaty ghost as well coming out of the underground.
Yeah.
But not much else. It's all sort of wispy, smoky effects or whatever.
And then that song that plays, like, please, please, please. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, that whole rushing towards the end,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a bit too fast.
Okay.
I want to put the brakes on
for a film that you think's too long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get rid of some of the waffle in between.
Okay.
I mean, I sort of like the... Obviously, I like the Pecker storyline.
Is he Peck?
He is Peck, but he calls him Pecker, doesn't he?
Okay.
I like that storyline, but it sort of puts the brakes on a little bit for me. Whereas the end just seems very, very rushed. I love it when Sigourney Weaver gets taken over.
Yeah,
she's so sensual.
That got her the part, didn't it?
Did it really?
Mm. Well, we'll talk about that later. Then.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, she's phenomenal in this. But just the end feels really rushed to me. There's a lot of waffle in this obvious set. And then they say, oh, we'll cross the streams and it's all over and done with.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the end battle. And I was...
It wasn't enough of a battle for me, though. I mean, she throws them around.
But...
You can see the wires.
but also in 1984, what kind of, I mean, I think they were a bit restricted, and I think they had a big budget, didn't they? And
it doesn't seem to me personally like they spent much on the end.
I don't know, it does seem pretty big, and the whole Marshmallow Man stuff,
they just talk and then cross the streams. I mean, that's the problem, and it's all over.
Well, that's just like our nights, isn't it?
Shut up. I love the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man as well. It's very irrelevant to this country. Is Stay Puffed an actual thing in America? I don't know.
I think it was made up for this.
Well, okay.
I think.
Should have used the Michelin Man. Maybe he wasn't sponsoring the film. I don't know. But for me personally, I felt the end was a bit rushed.
Okay.
A bit convenient because it's signposted way earlier. And then it's all over. But it's good. And the effects mostly work with Stay Puffed.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a few bits when you're like, oh, okay, there's a blue screen probably back then.
Yeah.
Yes, I've just looked that up. Sorry, I had to Google it. Apparently it was created for the film.
Right, okay. Surely there must have been something that was based on.
Probably some brand of marshmallows or something. But I think the way they use the music as well in it, it just, it makes you excited. They do celebrate for quite a while at the end.
Yes, they do.
About 5 minutes, don't they? They sort of...
Yeah.
This is another one of those films that we've come across, though, that you could take some of the stills from that film mm-hmm. and they just make, you know, really nice wall art or something.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Reitman has framed this in such a way that, mm-hmm. oh, again, we've talked about the word iconic. This is one of those 80s iconic films, isn't it?
Definitely. Well, I mean, that's reflected in the take. The budget was somewhere between... It's quite... what's the word I'm looking for? Not definite. but that's not the... I can't remember the word. Too pissed. So the budget was somewhere between 25...
It's quite not definite, right?
Yep.
Okay.
It's somewhere between $25 and $30 million. And so far, around the world, it's taken $295 million. That's not a bad return, is it?
No. Well, it must have taken more by now, right? Because re-releases and DVD sales yeah, and whatever else. And...
I just... Well, no, just talking about box office.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So. Okie dokie.
Okie dokie. Well, there we go. That's our little look at the film.
Yeah.
Should we have a little break? And
why don't
come
we
back
go across the streams and then we'll...
Okay.
And then we'll come back and have a look at the rest of it.
Nice.
And we're back. Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, where we are looking at the 1984 classic, absolute classic Ghostbusters.
Never heard of it.
Right, okay, so we're going to look at the cast now, but I do have some alternate castings for you. I bet you've seen some of these. Okay, so originally, let's talk about Winston. Eddie Murphy was mm-hmm. meant to play Winston, and I think it was a bigger part, wasn't it? And
yeah, then, he was supposed to come into the film earlier, wasn't he?
And then the part got reduced. Also, apparently, Reginald Val Johnson was right. almost cast as Winston.
Okay.
And he ended up being the prison guard, but then with the guard in the prison.
Yeah, I knew I recognised him. I couldn't think where from.
Die Hard.
Die Hard?
Yeah, Al. Sergeant Powell.
Oh, of course it is.
See, in my head, he's still Powell. He just yeah. works. He works yeah, there, yeah. and then he gets promoted later on.
Nice. Changes city.
Yeah. He goes out to, you know, LA. And there we go. That's nice. A little story I've got going on for him. Right, so Dana Barrett, Julia Roberts auditioned, apparently.
Okay.
I mean, she'd have been very young then.
Very young.
Very, yeah, because, you know, Pretty Woman was, what, 1990, and she was, yeah. you know, so, yeah, she'd yeah. been a very different character, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, Paul Rubens, apparently, was going to play Gozer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
It's a different take.
Yeah.
Now, Venkman... And so from what I understand, Venkman was written for John Belushi.
Right.
So apparently, and other people then were considered after Belushi passed away. Apparently, Steve Guttenberg turned down the role.
Right.
I can see him doing that, yeah. though. He's that yeah. sort of cocky 80s.
Is he sleazy enough to do all that stuff at the start?
Yeah, but was how much of that was Murray
yeah,
coming
yeah,
in?
I guess
and,
so, yeah.
Apparently, Tom Hanks and Robin Williams were considered as well.
Ooh. I'd like to see Robin Williams do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been nice. And apparently Keaton turned down the role of Venkman and Spengler.
Okay.
Michael Keaton. The man can do no wrong for me. and finally, I just want to say John Candy famously turned down the role of Lewis Tully. So he had conversations right. about it and he had ideas. Mm. He wanted Lewis to be German
right.
and have a pair of schnauzer dogs. Anyway, it turned out apparently Rick Moranis rang him later and said, thank you so much for turning that down because yeah. I had a great time doing yeah. it.
You can see he's having a good time doing it as well.
Oh, he loves it.
Yeah.
And then one that I didn't really know was there's a bit of an extra in there that is Ron Jeremy.
Yeah. And Debbie Gibson's in there as well.
Yes. Have you seen the picture of Ron Jeremy?
No, I have.
There we are. I've got it for you right here.
Nice.
If you Google it, nice. Ron Jeremy Ghostbusters, you can yeah. find him there.
Awesome.
Just after the whole thing explodes.
And if you don't know who Ron Jeremy is, you had a wasted childhood. That's what I'm going to say.
So there we go. There's some alternate castings for you.
Nice. Well, let's go straight in then with the star of the film, I suppose.
Yeah.
Bill
Rick
Murray.
Moran. Oh, right.
He is great. As I said before, though, he is just Bill Murray in everything he seems to do.
Yeah, I mean, his Venkman energy is different to his, say, Groundhog Day energy and stuff, but he's still got that.
Yeah, he's not the most likable of people. character-wise,
mm-hmm.
but he's very, very funny. There's no two ways about it.
I think he's a large part of why this works and why mm-hmm. why in 1984 people fell in love with this is because
yeah.
I as a kid I fell in love with Venkman. I was like, I want to be Peter Venkman. He
yeah.
was my favourite because he was the
he's
snarky.
Naughty.
He's snarky.
Yeah.
He's the sort of Chandler. You know, he's got yeah. the quip for everything, and you know, he's fun.
Yeah, and he's got some great one-liners as well. Obviously, he's got a very, very quick comic mind.
Yeah.
I just feel that he's a bit too much watching it now.
I think they described the original three as Venkman as the mouth,
mm-hmm.
Raymond as the heart,
right.
and Egon as the brains.
As the brain, yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to see more of those two, I think, and then Winston when he comes in as well.
Yes.
But what's there works very well.
It does. He is very likable. Some like as watching it, God knows how many years later, you kind of go, oh... Okay, that was a really random choice there, Bill, but okay, I'm sure they went
yeah.
with it.
Yeah. Sleazy bastard.
I mean, this is just back in the day when it was just really difficult to get Bill Murray to do a film. He's just such an acting anomaly, isn't he?
Yeah.
And apparently in the new one, hopefully. So he said he's going to be in it, so
right.
To what degree, I don't know, but it would be nice to see Venkman back on our screens.
Yeah.
All right, so, I mean, I love these guys, Dan Aykroyd and Hal Ramis. Let's talk about Dan first, shall we?
Yep. I really like him, and I think that's my problem, really. I wanted to see more of him, because he is funny. He's really likable, and he gives the money
mm-hmm.
to set up
yeah.
the company, if you like, in the first place.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of gets a bit sidelined, and I can see why. And it's already an hour and 45.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what, because he's very, I think he's as funny as Bill Murray, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at things like Blues Brothers and Spies Like Us, and even Dragnet to a certain extent, he's a very clever mind, having
yeah.
written the script as well,
and he's got a really dry sense of humour.
Yeah, yeah, and I just think maybe there should have been more interplay between the three guys, because they all just seem to accept what Venkman does, and it's almost his fault that they get chucked out of the
yes,
of the
it
university.
Is, yeah, completely.
So I would have liked to see more of him. And I like the fact, I think there's a quote or a story about the way that Slimer is eating the food at the hotel.
Mm.
It's written as an homage to the way Belushi was eating in Animal House.
Right.
He put that in as well. And I think that's really nice.
Yeah. And you could, I mean, obviously Belushi and Aykroyd were very, very close.
Yeah.
And you can feel the presence of Belushi in this film as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I said, Aykroyd and Ramis wrote the script with a little bit from Moranis as well.
I think Aykroyd was first, wasn't he? And then when Reitman was brought on board, he said, well, listen, let's get Ramis in.
Because, yeah. He wasn't going to do it, was he? He was just a writer, and he was brought in later.
Oh, but let's speak about Ramis. I mean, listen,
yeah.
I loved the man. I thought he was brilliant in this part, but also his body of work is phenomenal.
Yeah. Absolutely. Another very, very, very talented man. Lost way too fucking soon.
Yeah, yeah. 2014, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, Harold Ramis as Egon is... He's
underused.
Just brilliant.
Yeah.
But he is... The moments he is used, it is good.
He wrote Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes.
Mm-hmm. Did he write Groundhog Day or just direct it?
He did the screenplay.
Right. I think, I mean, I was watching Ghostbusters 2 documentary when you turned up. And Murray was saying, actually, I took the majority of the lines in the first one. We're sharing it out a bit more in the second
Good.
Film.
That's.
Because you don't want it to be the Venkman show.
Which it does become a little
but
bit.
But he is the mouth again, you know.
Yeah. But going back to Ramis, like you said, we lost him in 2014. A great talent.
Really great talent. And, you know, I think, again, not to cock on about the new film, apparently a lot of the heart of it is to do with, you know, they do include Spengler, but not, they don't recreate him or anything, but
good,
there's
good.
a lot of homage to Harold Ramis in there.
Good.
Ernie, now, I love Ernie Hudson.
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh, what a guy.
I mean, he has that great scene in the car with mm-hmm. Aykroyd. And that just made me think, I want to see even more. And he does get some of the good lines, you know, when someone asks you if you're a god, say yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. There was one moment, though, I was like, Winston, I mean, I get why you're doing this, but when they were in the jail
mm-hmm.
and it's all going south, he went, look, guys, really sorry, I'm going to have to get my own lawyer on this one. And I thought, Don't fucking bail on the Ghostbusters, mate.
But he's only been working with them for a little while.
Yes, but then the next sentence, they went, Ghostbusters, a man wants to see. He was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm still one of the Ghostbusters. I'll go with you. So that line for me jarred a little bit because I'm like, there's no point in that line now because he then goes off and backs up the Ghostbusters saying, look, I've seen some real shit since I've been working with them. So that line jarred a little bit.
Maybe there's a darker thing to it.
It was a character that was, you know, meant to be much bigger. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Yeah, it's meant to have come from a military and paramedic background, from what I understand.
Okay.
And that was meant to be the case when Eddie Murphy was playing him. And then they just kind of...
That, I imagine, would have been a bit of willy-waggling on screen between him and Murray.
Yeah, I think...
who gets the best lines.
I think so, but it was Beverly Hills Cop that stopped this.
Right.
So...
God, it would have been a very different dynamic, wouldn't it?
It would have been, and I don't think it would have been as good. I think Ernie Hudson brings a gravitas to it, and you know, you can't have everybody being the
lead. Yeah, or the wannabe lead.
Or the comedy, yeah.
Yeah, but no, he's excellent. I really like him, what we do get to see of him in this.
Mm-hmm. Rick Moranis.
God, I love that man.
Genius.
Yeah, just brilliant.
As much as I love Candy, I'm really happy that it was Rick Moranis.
Again, it would have been a different vibe.
It would have been a different
whatever
vibe.
Whatever that fucking means.
Yeah, it would have been a different vibe.
And probably a lot less... I mean, it's not very naturalistic as it is, but it would have been much more play it up, I think. I mean, don't get me wrong, Moranis does play it up.
Yeah, but also, I think, no offence to Candy, but I believe... Rick Moranis running around New York possessed, much more than I probably would have believed Candy doing it.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. I could see him doing it now, and it would have jarred.
Yeah, I think he needed that. I hate to say it, like really wimpy character.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be possessed by, you know, not a god, but some sort of demon.
It's almost the same sort of character as Bobcat Goldthwait in Scrooged.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Downhill, repressed.
I mean, he's got great fucking hearing. Every time she's tiptoeing past.
Yeah.
And that whole monologue where he's talking about, so I thought, you know, you shouldn't leave your TV on so loud. And then somebody called the manager, so I thought I'd turn my TV on real loud. So there's something the problem with the TVs. Anyway, I got to go away. I'm going to do it. And he just
locks himself out every time. It's such a funny gag. It's an obvious gag, but it's really funny.
But he sells it, doesn't he? He sells it really.
He really
and his
does.
Party. Yeah, basically, I invited clients.
And it's all done in one shot. It's a great. It's
it
one,
is, isn't
it's,
it?
Yeah. It's and all improvised by all accounts.
I invited clients so that I could get a return on, you know, this salmon cost me
brilliant.
This. And what the fuck is Parcheesi, by the way? Okay.
Fucking.
All right. Fucking love Rick Moranis. I really, really
but
love him.
One of the things that sort of jarred for me again as well, when he's banging on the windows at the restaurant and the devil dog or whatever it is gets into him, consumes him, whatever... How come nobody can see the dog? How come we can't see that dog when he gets eaten?
Because the budget was only 25 million. Like
okay,
35
fair enough.
Million, so.
What's the fucking word I was looking for? Ambiguous.
Right.
Yes. There we go. I knew it would come back.
Drop that in. No one will know.
Yeah.
So some secondary characters. I mean, I say secondary.
Hang on. We haven't looked at Sigourney yet.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Wowzers. Don't you diss my Sigourney.
I wondered why your hands were down your pants.
Hey! Okay. Oh, God, how good is she in this film?
She's great.
How's that then?
She's apparently the whole dog thing when she auditioned and turned into a dog, and did this whole dog thing during the audition. And that's what Reitman actually went, oh, we need to change this, and made Dana Barrett's character turn into after seeing Sigourney Weaver audition. And obviously, they clearly gave her the part. So,
so good. But at the start, when she's the musician, it's such a changing character. She becomes this siren, this sexy, beautiful siren lady. I just think she's phenomenal. She works so well, and it just proves what a great actress she is.
She's great. There's one little character thing that I'm going to go, okay, that I picked up on when I watched it, which was she's very anti-Venkman when they first meet. Mm. Very, very anti-Venkman. Then the Ghostbusters get famous and she seems quite pro-Venkman. Do you know what I mean? As in,
I do, but is she anti-Venkman or is she anti-bullshit?
Maybe she's anti-bullshit, but I think maybe there's bits missing in the script somewhere.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Because it just seems like, you know, get out, shoving his face out the door. Next time she sees him, it's all charming because the Ghostbusters are now quite famous.
Yeah.
And therefore it makes Dana look a little bit shallow, but I don't know if that's because there's bits missing.
At all. when he first goes round to her flat, he's so sleazy.
He's a weirdo, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a fucking weirdo.
But hey, boys, it's Dr. Venkman.
I think she finds it quite funny. Why was the whole Zool thing in her fridge?
Well, if you notice at the end, I only noticed it the first time the other night. I've seen it so many times. Behind where her fridge should have been is when they went into the apartment is the staircase.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that whole thing, portal, whatever else, and I'm guessing where... I didn't really notice that where the fridge was is the actual staircase up into the ultimate other dimension.
In a fridge. In a fridge.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so they could have that little joke about, oh my God.
Yeah. And display some Coke cans.
Yes. Yes, and other products.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, no, she's great. She's great.
She's brilliant in this. Yeah. And this is after, you know, Alien and Aliens, isn't it?
Alien, not Aliens.
Alien, not Aliens. But
yeah.
So a very, very different character. And she says a lot of time about turning on set, it's like it's like being in school with the naughty kids.
I can imagine. I bet things changed every bloody day.
Of course they did, yeah.
Yeah.
William Atherton.
Prick.
Yeah. And he does play those parts very well, doesn't he? From this to Die Hard.
Yeah.
He must be the most hated man of the 80s. You know, not only did he get the Ghostbusters shut down, he went and interviewed John McClane's kids and then exposed his identity to the terrorists at Nakatomi Plaza. So he ruined Christmas. And he's good at what he does.
Yeah, he's very much, like we said, that sort of character, isn't he?
It's true. This man has no dick.
That's a great line. I mean, it's obvious. You saw it coming, but... He does it very, very well.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Prick.
And I suppose, I mean, you got the mayor as well, who is, he's recognisable. I've seen him in so many things.
Yeah, the mayor's recognisable. The hotel manager's recognisable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good cast, though. Really good cast.
Great cast. And I suppose we should really say a few words about Ivan Reitman as well.
Wow.
The director, obviously.
Yes. I mean, he's just brilliant. And, you know, the background he brought to this, you know, using practical effects, maybe for Dana Barrett as well, floating above the bed and all that sort of stuff.
And it works really, really well. I mean, you know how it's done. It's an old music hall magic trick, illusion. But it works really, really well.
And do you know what I think is serendipitous, though, is the fact that his son grew up on this set and has gone on years later to tell a new story about Ghostbusters, utilising the old ones, but also bringing it up to date for a new generation. I think that is a really, really, really awesome thing. I mean...
Well, let's wait till we see it first.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But yeah, Ivan Reitman was responsible for things like Stripes and Big Shots and Ghostbusters 2.
I only watched Stripes recently.
Oh, I remember you saying, yeah.
Yeah, I watched it during the first lockdown.
Another Bill Murray film, if anyone's not seen it. It's all right, isn't it?
It's, do you know, dated. What it is? It's fine. It's. I think I described it as Police Academy, but just in the army.
Yeah. Although he was actually responsible for Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, which is a shite film.
It's brilliant.
It's fucking awful.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. But thank God we'll never get to that.
Yeah.
Until we do our 90s cash in.
No.
All right. Okay. Let's take another break then and come back with music, which I can't wait to talk about, by the way, and the quiz.
Okay.
And we're back! We got one! All right, let's go into the music, Dad.
Okay, then. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's that. Done. Huh?
Every school disco throughout the 80s.
Oh, my God, yes. Good old Ray Parker Jr. And who shouted out, Ghostbusters?
Wasn't it a bunch of his friends?
But mainly his girlfriend.
Oh, right, okay.
Nepotism what? Yeah, but anyway, that's just one song, isn't it?
Does that mean that she's now like an award-winning artist because she shouted out Ghostbusters?
Yeah, she's in the Ivor Novello Hall of Fame or whatever.
She's going to sing the Grand Ole Opry one year. She's going to go out and go, Ghostbusters! Acapella, acapella.
Anne Capella, is that her name? That'd be funny.
That would be.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. Fucking hell. We're waffling. Welcome back. Yes.
Part three.
Yeah. So, yes, music. Bear with us, we're pissed. Elmer Bernstein. Stein. Fucking hell. What a score.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think I love the film. And for me, the score was my favourite thing about it.
It's a cat, like, without sounding too wanky, it is a character within itself, isn't
yeah,
it?
That, it's so good. And it's so underrated. And I can't believe it's, you know, it doesn't get its own release on record and stuff like that all the time, or it's not in concert, you know, Ghostbusters with a live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. It's an amazing score. It's epic. It's sweeping. It's adventurous. It's got that sort of old Saturday morning picture show feel to it.
Yeah.
That Indiana Jones has as well. It's brilliant. But then you get this dollop of 80s styly.
Yes.
Whacked in as well. It's punctuated with 80s sounds and soundtrack songs. Elmer Bernstein is just phenomenal. I mean, we knew that anyway. He's responsible for things like Magnificent Seven and Ten Commandments. But in this, it's up there with one of the greatest scores ever.
Yeah.
And it's so underrated, and I can't believe it. But it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
As you say, it's so recognisable.
Yeah.
But if you were to say to somebody, you play the bit of music, they'd be like, oh, it's from Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'd be able to tell you it's Elmer Bernstein.
Actually, I think maybe we would actually struggle a little bit to tell you it's from Ghostbusters.
You think?
I think most people, if you say, oh, sing me one of the themes from Ghostbusters, they'll just go, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's a great, great song.
Mm-hmm.
Dana's theme is beautiful. The Ghostbusters theme itself, their theme is great. It's good, fun, little tune. And it's a great, great score.
I'm not going to disagree on that. I think that maybe they could have used him more because, and you know, I think some of the stuff he maybe, from what I've read, I think some of the stuff he'd written got taken out and replaced with some of the pop tunes that we get in there. Like, please, please, please.
Oh, but there's some amazing songs in there as well. Mm-hmm. You can't argue. Obviously, like we say, Ray Parker Jr. and his girlfriend doing Ghostbusters. The actual song. One of my favourites. You got In the Name of Love from the Thompson Twins.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Thompson Twins. Tom Bailey, for me, is a genius. You've got Air Supply in there, like you said.
Please. Please.
And the Tramps with Disco Inferno.
Yeah.
You can't fail to love that song.
Is it just me, though, that wanted to see the Ghostbusters dance the night away with some of the lovely ladies at the club when they were talking about it? I was like,
yeah.
I want to see that. I want to see the Ghostbusters.
It's already an hour and 45. Yeah. You don't want to see
it. Come on. It's not like it's Does Boot or something, is it?
Stupid scene with the pavement.
They could have. Also, though, I will look for it. It's music that I really want to add to, you know, because I love a lot of orchestral music, and I need to add this because I don't listen to it enough.
Right. And there's so many different styles in this film. It runs the whole gamut, if you like, and I love it.
Okay. Well, that's the music, I suppose.
Where do we go next?
We could quiz each other, couldn't we? See what we picked up about the film. That'd be a nice new feature, wouldn't it?
Should
we call it pub quiz?
Should we quiz all over each other?
This is what happens when we record two in one night.
Eyes down for a full house.
Right then.
Righty then. So as Matthew said, it's time for the quiz. and being episode 56, an even numbered episode, so I get to ask first.
Excuse me, I burped then.
Yeah, I get to go first. So are you ready?
I'm very much ready.
Question number one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go in nice and gently. Let's ease in.
Thank you for being gentle.
That's okay. How much did the car cost?
I'm pretty sure. Now, you see, my screen's got Ron Jeremy on it, as you can see here.
Okay.
It cost, I think, 90% confident it was $4,800.
Correct. One to you.
Ooh, okay. But then it needs some work done to it, some shocks. All right. During the opening of the film, I suppose, how many cards were the students meant to be looking at for the $5?
I thought you were going to say how many cards were thrown out of the filing thing in the library.
Oh, no. So when the students are looking at things, how many cards are they meant to look at for the $5?
It's a lot, isn't it? Because he said there's still blah, blah, blah to go.
Yeah.
You fucker. 75.
I'm talking about grand total. How many cards?
80. I don't know.
What's your answer?
Oh, fuck off. 75.
Okay. No, 80.
Oh, piss.
The total amount of cards, because
there's still 75 to go.
Still 75 to go. They'd just done five.
Right, you fucker. Okay.
That wasn't of the you
it fucking was.
You got the answer.
Okay.
I thought you were gonna get it then.
Which one should I go for?
The easy one.
Fuck off. Not after that.
That was easy if you knew it. I suppose.
Yeah, if you
did
it.
Know it though, you did know it. You just didn't know which one to go with.
At the hotel,
mm-hmm.
What was the name of the woman that had hired at the ballroom?
It was. I don't think I know it, but I'll take a stab at. It's something like Mrs. Javorsky or something like that. But that's,
is that your answer?
Yeah, it's the best I can do.
Mrs. Van Houten.
Okay. Maybe I went for the crystals, the Shavorskis or something. All right. 2-1 to me. This should be a relatively easy one. What three things does Egon collect?
Spores, mould and fungus.
Boom.
Thank fuck for that. I couldn't remember if it was spores or not. Right. Okay. Well, that's two each then. Question number three. Question number three, actually, is a return of the Finish the Quote. Seems you know this film quite well.
Well.
And you've got three options, 1, 2, or 3.
Two.
It's between Ray and Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Ray says, we're the Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm getting.
Yep.
I think... I'm going to take a stab at this.
Right.
Great. Who does your taxes?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
I'll let you have it. Who does your taxes?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you fucker. Oh, 3-2. This could be it.
Ooh.
Oh, my word.
I thought there might have been a great chucked in there first, but thank you for letting me have it.
I'm nice like that. That's fine.
I really want to know what the other quotes were as well.
I could tell you, man.
All right then. So the three scientists, they share an office. What is scrawled on the door at the beginning? It's been graffitied.
I don't know. I've absolutely no idea.
Venkman burn in hell.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that.
Fuck.
Okay, that's it. You've got it. 4-2 to you. I'm not surprised, to be fair, with Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Nice.
What were some of the other quotes,
okay,
man?
Okay. Well, number one was, why worry?
Oh, shit. Well, that gives me a lot to work on. No idea. Who's that?
One of us is carrying an unlicensed nuclear on his back. Whatever.
Okay.
That's Venkman.
Fucking hell.
And the third one, again was Ray. Listen.
Is that all you were giving me?
Yeah.
Like, listen. No idea.
Because it's a good gag. Listen, you smell something?
Oh, no. I would not have got that at all.
Okay.
All right. I had, what's the librarian called?
Alice.
Right. Where is the name Zool found?
Oh, no, I can't remember. He found it somewhere. No.
Tobin's spirit guide.
Right.
And how many mortgages does Ray now
have?
3.
Right. Yeah.
So they weren't particularly.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Can't see questions.
What's Deneen's surname?
Melnitz.
Yeah. What's Lewis's apartment number?
Oh, I don't know.
Bollocks, 2202. Dana's apartment number?
I guess 2209?
6. What are Egon and Ray eating when Dana arrives at Ghostbusters' office? Oh, for
I'm going to say a Twinkie.
Cheez-Its.
But we do have Twinkies right here.
What is Venkman studying at the start with the two students?
The effect of... negative reinforcement on ESPN abilities.
ESPN?
ESP abilities.
Yeah.
I don't know where the fuck that came from.
ESPN's a TV channel, isn't it?
But the whole thing, I can't remember. Nice. Yeah, I don't know how I know.
What's their uni room number?
Where it says Venkman, then, I don't know.
205A. How many years has Lewis been an accountant?
20?
4.
Oh, okay. Just 4 then, right? Yeah.
What floor number at the hotel is Slimer on?
8?
12. What's the mayor's name? Lenny.
Lenny, of course it is Lenny.
Yeah. Which department does Walter Peck work for?
Well, is in the actual, the EP, EPA.
Yeah, so what does that stand for?
Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah. What day did Dana and Venkman have their date?
Thursday.
What's the size of the Twinkie that Egon talks about?
I think it measures, this is like 32 meters long.
35 feet long and 600 pounds. And what's the Ghostbusters phone number?
555.
Obviously.
Well, no, actually, apparently originally they had a 1-800 number.
Jeez.
Where you would ring up and you'd hear them going, we're the Ghostbusters and we're out at the moment. But no, I don't know.
555-2368.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the quiz. That means after 56, it's 4-3 to you. Mm-hmm. And we worked, if you haven't listened to last week's episode,
do it.
You'll figure out why it's 4-3 after only six episodes. So there we go. That's the quiz. I guess it's time for last orders.
Let's do it. Let's have it.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So that was our little look-see at Ghostbusters from 1984. Obviously, there's a new Ghostbusters film on the horizon.
Easy for you to say.
No, not at all. I guess now we just sum up and give it a score then.
I think probably, because we are going to watch the new one. I think we might sort of mention it in a future podcast. Well, go, we watched it.
Ghostbusters 2 is from 1989, so that I'm sure will crop up at some point.
We probably will get to talk about that, won't we?
Yeah.
Don't remember Ghostbusters 2 being as good, though.
I remember actually buying a video cassette, and it was Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2.
Mm.
And in the middle, I think, was the old black and white cinema Flash Gordon episodes.
Okay.
I mean, it was a really bizarre the cassette must have been like 5 hours long. It was really bizarre. Weird.
Do you remember those cassettes that it was a double cassette and you'd open it up and there was just a partition in the middle, so you could open up one side then shut it. You'd have to open up the other side.
Yeah. Or they opened out really wide, didn't they?
Yes.
So one on one side and one. Yeah. Ah, proper physical stuff.
I used to love videotapes.
Yeah, me too.
And then it went through a stage. I threw away 500 videotapes before I moved to the Canaries. Now, they are some of the films we're talking about are 10, 12, 15 quid on eBay. And I'm like, no, really?
Crazy.
Anyway, so let's...
Season 2, and we're still quite a nice house.
Crazy.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, do you want me to go first since it's the even number one?
Yeah. Even number one? It's... It wasn't a chore to watch this film. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to say. Sometimes we'll pick a film and like, oh, yeah.
So you're going first then.
Hmm?
You're going first.
Oh, you said, I thought you said, do you want to go first?
It's fine. It doesn't matter. We both got to do it.
No, but listen. Okay. Anyway, so as I say, sometimes it's a chore. And sometimes it's a chore listening to your sum up. So why don't we go on with it then? Let's hear yours.
I can't. Anyway, yes. Ghostbusters. I liked it.
Did you say that? Or did Ray Parker Jr.'s girlfriend
shout that? Shut up! You're as quippy as fucking Venkman. All right, I liked it. There's lots of gadgets, which is going to drag any boy / man in. It's a bit slow in places. It's a good rollicking story. It's good fun. I do a bit, so I just want to get on with it. Murray, stop fucking quipping. But it's great. And there's some good cameos there from people that I guess are... very famous in America. I remember Casey Kasem and a few other people as well. So Larry King, I think, makes an appearance.
Yes,
he
does. Yeah.
And Ivan Reitman, the director, is also the voice of Zool, isn't he? And it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a good romp. I think it's a bit slow in places, and I think the end is too rushed. As I said to you before, it was never really on my list to rewatch because I liked it at the time. But watching it again this week, I enjoyed it a lot more. And yes, it has some faults. There's some dodgy effects. Some of the stop motion is a bit naff. Some of the matte paintings are naff. Some of the overlay stuff, I especially at the start or near the start when you first see the apartment, the ghoul thing hanging over the into the building, you can see through its fangs. Since his car's driving along and they appear. So there's a bit of there, and you can see a crew member's foot or whatever behind the... Venkman's office.
I didn't know
so
this.
So there's a few bits that need... that could have been tightened up and polished a bit more. But essentially, the film is great. It could have been improved. It could have been a lot worse. So I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Interesting.
And I would go back and watch it again.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
Yourself?
Fuck it, too. I agree with a lot of what you say. But what I think this film's got going for it is it's got the right place, the right time, magic in a bottle factor to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think without some of these elements, this film would just be this B movie that's forgotten in you know, and occasionally shown on, you know, people might look it up on YouTube and remember this shit film. If it wasn't for Ivan Reitman, I don't think the film would have worked. If it wasn't for Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis, yeah, don't get me wrong, I love Ernie Hudson, but these three creatives that actually, especially Ramis and Aykroyd, you know, Reitman honed the thing, which was going to be set in the future or set with aliens coming down and stuff, and he tried to ground it. And I think it is a case of, sorry, it's a long-winded way of saying right place, right time, magic in a bottle. They got lucky as well with what they got. And I think it is fucking a work of genius in the respect of it captured so many kids' hearts and attentions to the point where, actually, when we are talking about then the cartoon influenced the second film, because it got so big, it was everywhere. I personally rang the Ghostbusters as a kid.
Right.
And, you know, if you dial 555 here and then the rest of the number, you're going to get a Plymouth number, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I rang somebody and I swear to God, I said, is that the Ghostbusters? And he could hear it was a kid. And he played along and he went, yes. And I said, is that Peter Venkman? And he was like, yes. And I said, listen, we got a ghost here. And can you guys come around? Yeah, we round later. And I didn't leave my friend's house because I thought we were going to get the Ghostbusters. I mean, I was obsessed. I was genuinely like, we're getting the Ghostbusters. My mum was like, no, it's time to go home. It's 9 o'clock at night. I was like, no, they're going to arrive. Little did this guy know.
You were a dickhead even as a kid.
Yeah, basically. anyway, it was really good going back to watch this. And I'm under no illusions it's the best film of all time, but it's got a real special place in my heart. It's a good solid 8 for me. Cool. Because it's got a few flaws, and as you say, there's a few tweaks that could be made.
Mm-hmm.
It's head and shoulders above the second one, and hopefully on a par, if not worse, than the third one.
That's a big hope.
That is a big hope. Yeah. I mean, hopefully on a par would be nice, or just even a nice homage to the first film would be lovely. But yeah, that's it for me.
Cool. So 15 and a half for Ghosty Busters.
Mm-hmm. That's a good score.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a very good score. Right, so that's that one done and dusted.
I mean, even though I'm a bit drunk, I wasn't going to go sort of like Dirty Dancing drunk and go like 10 out of 10. But
no, that's fine. If you think Dirty Dancing is better than Ghostbusters, that's absolutely fine. And if you haven't listened to that episode, go back. Go back and have a listen to season one. I don't know what fucking episode number is.
Yeah, we were drunk anyway.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah. That's it. Next week then. Are you going to tell me what we're fucking doing next week?
All right then.
Alrighty
then. The tagline for next week's film. This is the UK tagline. Mm. He's facing the ultimate challenge and fighting for his life. This person is fighting for their life and facing the ultimate challenge. So that is the tagline for next week's
Boris
film.
Boris Johnson.
Or next week's, or next time's film.
He's a cunt.
With Boris Johnson?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how you managed to segue that, but
yeah, me neither.
But also, this is the sort
he
of
he said this was fucking political. Huh?
We've not done a film like this as such. I don't think.
I don't know.
I know because you don't know what it is, but you do.
Is. I do,
but you don't. But you do. I don't think we've done a film like this. Oh no, that's not in it. That's not in the film. Anyway,
what film?
I'm looking forward to this because it's relevant again because there is a director's pass at the film, I suppose, coming out.
Right. Cash in.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe somebody, you know, maybe he's a bit bored in the lockdown. But okay.
Fucking brilliant.
So listen, if you'd like to get in touch, if you would like to help quiz sometime or just give us a bit of feedback. First of all, you can look on Apple Podcasts, whatever else, give us a rating, like, or any of your podcast apps. We would love that very much.
Get in touch. It'd be great to hear from you.
Give us a like on Facebook and Twitter.
Twitter.
And whatever else. We are so happy to be back doing this. So we genuinely love hearing from you. Podcasts at 80sadventures.com. Anything else, Daz?
Nope.
Right. Until next time then, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheersy!
Isn't that normally when this synopsis happens?
Maybe.
Fuck it. So anyway, yes, we're going deeper in. Let's rip the